League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
We're joined for the Mining Matters podcast now by Anthony Villieun. He's the man, the driving force at Andrada, which has assets in Namibia. And it's been a while since we caught up, Anthony. How have you been doing?
Alistair, yeah, good to catch up again and good to be on the podcast. Doing very well, thanks. Nice to be in London over the summer, attending the various activities around the mining, the London Indaba and also Oxford Mining Club, and catching up with old faces and just getting a little bit of a sense of where the city's at. And, you know, I think we're looking at some positive times ahead. So it's nice to be over, nice to chat to everyone and tell the Andrada story a little bit out there.
Yeah, so you think there might be some good times ahead then? What makes you think so?
So firstly, I have to be a perennial optimist as a mining CEO. Otherwise, you'd go into some sort of decline. Yeah. But we're definitely seeing that there's a lot more positivity out in the markets. I think you know, despite what's happening globally, you know, I think people are coming to the realization that we still are going to need resources, and you know, the only way of getting those new resources is finding them and financing them. And you know, there's been a dearth of financings over the last couple of years. So I think that there's definitely some green shoots out there in terms of where I see the market. And you know, London's traditionally been the home of mining finance, so you know, hopefully that kicks off again.
So you've mentioned you've been to the London Indaba. I think a lot of our viewers and listeners will know about the Cape Town Indaba, but what's the London Indaba? Tell us about that.
So it's a smaller version, obviously. It's run by Bernard Swanepoel. He runs a number of these smaller conferences where it allows mining professionals and financiers to get together and discuss the matters of the day. Been very well attended. You know, Bernard always puts on a good show, tries to bring in a little bit of controversy to get conversations started. So it's been very good. You know, it's good to see, you know, the platinum boys are happy again, platinum prices up. You know, obviously with Valterra splitting away from Anglo, it's good to see that there's movement again in the mining sector.
So it's a South African focused event, is it, the London Indaba, or an African focused event?
It's definitely got an African feel to it, but you know, I think all the big mining companies were there. So you know, I think well represented across the board, but definitely a sort of an African slant, if you will.
So you're, you know, you've been around a few years now, Anthony. I mean, I remember in the old days when you were a young man and you were just starting out. And now you're a sort of venerable, experienced chap. So do you get to sit on any panels and let your views be known to the young whippersnappers that are up and coming?
Yes, hopefully I'm still one of those young whippersnappers, but I'm sitting on a panel today, talking about critical minerals and the role of junior miners in terms of identifying critical minerals and how you go about building a mine from scratch, which is what Andrada sort of prides ourselves on being able to do.
So what do you What do you class as critical minerals in this particular context?
Well, it's quite interesting. You know, every year there's a new sort of buzzword in the mining world, and this year is definitely critical minerals. I think, you know, with what's happening in the tariff space and the geopolitical scene, you know, everyone's talking about critical minerals. But, you know, to be honest, Alistair, they're all critical. You know, the world has not been financing exploration and development for a number of years. And, you know, technology's marching on. The world is changing, you know, in terms of AI. But, you know, the fundamentals of how we're going to power all the mineral, how we're going to power all this technology, and where the minerals are going to come to build all this technology, you know, it seems to have missed everybody's plates. So, you know, from my point of view, they're all critical. I think that the ones in particular are going to be all around electrification and you know, the things that, you know, that would power data centers, microchips, semiconductors, things like that. So those would be the minerals I would definitely keep an eye on. Also, things like electric vehicles. You know, I still think lithium is going to have some life back in it in the next couple of months or year, maybe. So it's I think it's more a matter of how people are going to actually identify and develop new mining projects. You know, because I think that's what's going to be critical for the mining industry going forward.
I mean, it's interesting to talk about these critical minerals. Sometimes people bracket copper in that space as well, simply because copper is so widely used in electrification, as you mentioned. And the sort of market dynamic in terms of the promote seems to be that if we're going to electrify as the world seems to want to plan to, we're going to need a huge amount more copper than we're currently mining. So therefore, that's a bull case for copper. But of course, the bear scenario is those plans are just going to fail. So, and I think you could sort of read across those two bull and bear cases into quite a few of the critical metals, where the bulls are saying, yeah, we've got all these brilliant electrification plans, and that's going to mean we're going to have rising prices in critical metals and more mines coming on stream. Whereas the bears will say, these plans are just not realistic and it's never going to happen. So, where do you sort of sit on that spectrum?
Look, obviously on the bull side, but you know, where I think people are missing a point is that you know, the replacement of current mines is not happening. So, you know, what we're seeing is the bigger deposits being mined out. Not a lot of people are spending time in terms of identifying where the next big deposits are going to come from. So, I think it's the replacement rate of the current mining that's not really taking place at the moment. And you know, the big deposits are getting harder to find. You know, the mining methods are not as easy. You know, although technology's moved on, it's still hard going, you know, building a mine. So I think that's one area that's quite critical. And the other one is from a human resource point of view. You know, mining's not sexy as it used to be, and you don't you a lot of professionals are choosing not to go into mining anymore. So you've got that whole intellectual sort of resource base that's not there, that's not capable of identifying and building mines. So I think that combined with that the replacement rate of the old mines is where the real sort of bull case, if you want to call it, lies in mining. So it's just going back to the fundamentals is who's going to find the mines, how they're going to build them, and where they're going to find them. You know, and that's I think the you know, if you take away all the noise around it, that's where the fundamentals lie in the whole mining industry at the moment.
I mean, where are you going to find them? That's an interesting question. You guys are in Namibia. So, I mean, that's a jurisdiction that's sort of quite well established as a mining destination, but perhaps not top of everybody's list in terms of how much they know about it as a country to go mining in the UK. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to go mining in Namibia for critical metals or any metals for that matter.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. So, we've obviously focused very much on geology, and if the geology is in a good geography, it makes life a lot easier. Namibia is a fantastic place to invest in. They've been very accommodating from a long-established mining law and a well-designed cadastre system. There's everything's going right on that side. There's a good, well-educated mining sort of human resource that you can tap into that's available there. It's a mining jurisdiction. Some of the biggest uranium deposits in the world are there, but from our point of view, very much underexplored. In particular, the region that we're in, the Erongo region, the geology is absolutely spectacular. We've been very pleasantly surprised as to how much opportunity there is in the geology. When we first started our operations out there, the idea was to go and pick up the historical tin mining areas. And what we found is that there was a huge amount of data, first of all, and a precedent for mining, which is what's allowed us to accelerate a lot of our mining development plans. But with this whole new narrative around specifically critical minerals, what we're finding is that associated with a lot of these ore bodies is a multiple sort of polymetallic nature of the ore bodies that allows not only one critical mineral to be mined, but numerous critical minerals. So, I think it's a very fertile country just in terms of the capacity for new discoveries, and especially playing into the critical mineral space. And it's a very welcoming investment environment. And then, to add even more to Namibia, they've just had some phenomenal oil discoveries off the coast. So, it's really got a lot going for it, and a very exciting place to be. And what I liken it to is it's the new Western Australia. Very so I'm quite excited about our opportunity of having a first mover advantage in that space.
It's quite a sparsely populated country, I believe.
Yes, I mean there's only 3 million people, and it's a huge, huge country. So, you'll be able to see the increase in GDP per capita quite substantially as all of these projects kick off, as the oil revenues start coming, the mining starts developing. So, I really think there's a very bright future for Namibia. They call it the land of the brave. So it's I think the brave people are going to be very, very rich people one day.
Well, that bodes well. So, does that mean that, sort of speaking very generally, and perhaps too generally, but that if you go mining in Namibia, you're less likely to have to sort of do relocation work of townships and villages or anything like that because there just aren't that many people, or is it very variable?
Yes, look, the area that we're mining in is probably the size of Belgium, and there's only 150,000 people in that province. So yeah, very sparsely populated, but they're very conscious of conservation, as are we. The tribe, there's a very sort of set tribal authorities that manage the conservation areas. So the whole nexus between mining and conservation and socio-economic upliftment is quite a key priority for the Namibians, and obviously for ourselves as sustainable miners, it's a key priority for us. So it's a very different sort of set of circumstances, but it's something that we as Andrada, pride ourselves in helping uplift communities and make sure that we do it in a sustainable manner. So very different to other parts of the world, but also a very interesting dynamic to manage.
Is there any black economic empowerment legislation along the lines of South Africa's?
No, it's not in a legislated format, but mining companies are rightly so encouraged to include Namibians in all of their development, and it's something that we also promote actively from ourselves. And you know, so it's not legislated is the bottom line, but it is actively encouraged.
So, which country would you rather go mining in then, Anthony? South Africa or Namibia?
Oh, it's easy. Namibia by a country mile, really. We've operated all over the continent in some far-flung places like South Sudan and Madagascar, but obviously traveled extensively throughout Africa, and worked in a number of different countries. But by far, Namibia is definitely the best investment jurisdiction that I've come across on the continent.
So when you say you travelled widely, is that with Andrade or with your sort of previous jobs?
So, my previous life, but I'm a born prospector, born into a prospecting family. So, traveling has always been in my blood, and looking at new exciting jurisdictions and geologies is what I was what's been ingrained in me over the course of my lifetime.
Yeah, and you were associated with Bushveld for a while, weren't you? The Andrade enterprise kind of, I don't know if spun out of Bushveld is the correct terminology, but it was a kind of offshoot, and then you kind of gained independence. Is that a sort of a brief broadly correct summary?
Yes, look, Bushveld, was at one stage the darling of the London Stock Exchange. Fortune and I ran Bushveld. We took it from a 20 million pound market cap to half a billion pound market cap. Very much vanadium focused, and there was at that time when I left, we were probably about a half a billion pound market cap at Bushveld. And the tin assets and the whole tin portfolio had enough critical mass to demerge, and we saw an opportunity to spawn a whole new company, and that's what we've done. Unfortunately, Bushveld's, as we all know, has had a bit of a tragic demise since I left. But I think that the path that we're on at Andrada is very exciting, and hopefully we can surpass those Bushveld achievements that we had in the past.
Yeah, so I mean that was also critical metals. You mentioned vanadium there, and now you're sort of, and then you've also mentioned in this conversation tin, lithium, and am I right in remembering there's some tantalum at the Andrade assets as well?
Yes, what I mentioned earlier is a lot of these deposits are polymetallic ore bodies. So everything gets mined and processed at once. But the nature of the ore body means that you get multiple revenue streams. So, like at Wheat, for instance, tantalum is a byproduct. Also, tantalum prices is amazing at the moment. The lithium and the tin are, once we bring the lithium on stream, either the tin or the lithium will basically be produced for free. When we picked up all of these historic mining areas, there was obviously a plethora of these critical minerals. So with Brandberg West coming on stream, Lithium Ridge and Uis, we're going to have a full suite of critical minerals. Brandberg West is tin, tungsten, copper. Also, a very straightforward mining proposition that was mined by Gold Fields. At Uis, we've got tin, tantalum, and lithium. It was mined by Iscor, and then Lithium Ridge obviously is just a big ridge of lithium that we've got a partnership with SQM to develop. So, three fantastic assets, but also giving us exposure to a whole suite of these critical minerals.
So just briefly tell us what stages each of these assets are. You mentioned a JV with SQM, which is obviously a big name, but where are we at with each, with Wyss and the others?
So Wyss is our sort of flagship asset, where all of the production happens. We've got 400 people operating the site. It's a huge ore body. It's a upward of 200 million tons. We're only mining currently at 1 million tons. So, that's a constant growth proposition. Bringing all of these byproduct minerals on stream, So it's a long-term big beast of an asset, and you know something we pride ourselves in having basically built up from scratch, and operated and expanded, continued expansion. So Uis is the flagship. Lithium Ridge, as I said, that's more of an exploration asset. We've got great partners there in SQM. You know the leaders in lithium mining and operations. It's obviously the Chilean based entity, but what they've committed to is spending up to $40 million to drill out and prove up that resource. I mean, Alistair, literally is a 6 kilometer ridge of lithium, incredibly prospective. You know, likened very much to the Andover project in Australia with Azure Minerals. So we're very excited by that, but as I said, very much early stage exploration drilling program. Brandberg West is an old mine site, very much like what Uis was. So you know, we're also looking at ways in which we can accelerate that development, bring that into production, add the copper and the tungsten into our product portfolio. And then recently, we've just acquired or got an option to acquire a new deposit called Guantacab. It's a super high grade tin ore body, and it's not too far from our operations. And it was fully drilled out by Gold Fields. In fact, my father signed off on the resource back in 1988. When he drilled it out, so super high grade, and I think we'll add a nice revenue kicker for our current operations. So it really is a suite of assets. Unlike you know a lot of juniors are focused on one commodity and one project. You know we focused on you know opening up a whole mining district here across numerous projects. Using our cash flows to do that and partnering up with strategic partners where possible. So it really is exciting. I mean, each of these projects could be a standalone project on their own, but you know, as a portfolio, it gives us a mini conglomerate type of feel, which is quite exciting for me to be leading and developing.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. So you mentioned cash flows there. So I'm assuming what you're saying is that the Uis cash flows are paying for the development work on the other projects, except for where SQM is also providing funding.
Yes, currently, and obviously we are also looking at, or we are busy expanding the cash flows at Uis. So you know, the idea is that you know you'll have a whole ecosystem of different mining sort of financings across the whole cash flow spectrum, and you know, the idea is that in the not too distant future, the whole organization will be self-sustaining, self-financing.
Now, $40 million from SQM—that's a big exploration spend. I mean, I know they're one of the biggest names in the world in lithium, so that may not be much to them. But
Yeah.
you know, in terms of the companies that we often talk about on this podcast, you know, we don't often hear of a $40 million exploration spend on an asset. So, what does that look like from your perspective?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's $40 million is 3/4 of our current market cap. So it shows you how undervalued we are, but also you know how incredibly prospective the Lithium Ridge is. You know, it really. So the idea is that $40 million, we want to drill out a resource, get to a reserve status, and then complete a bankable feasibility study. So it's quite a lot of work. It will probably drill the resource out in the next 12 to 18 months, and then the study work will then commence thereafter. So you know it's a big ask in terms of the work that we need to do, but I think you know there'll be a lot of good news coming out of what we've seen out there at least anyway.
So, did you guys discover this project or did you just acquire it?
No, so look, it was actually an old tin and tantalum mine. In fact, they called it the Tin Tan mine. So we were, merrily looking at the tin opportunity there, and we picked a few grab samples from the historic dumps, and we found that it was up to 4% lithium in there. And then we did some more ground truthing, and we found that this ridge actually extended for 6 kilometers. So it was part luck, obviously, but it was also we had different ideas as to what that operation would be, but very much I'd credit my geos for uncovering what I think will be a very significant lithium deposit in the future.
I mean, you talked about the mix of commodities across your projects. What do you, how do you have a rank order for the commodities these days? I mean, I remember when you started, it was all about the tin, and then you sort of gradually, realized that actually maybe lithium is going to be a big deal for you guys. How do they all sort of sit in comparison to each other these days?
So look, tin is my darling mineral. I've been been a tin bull since 2008. We've looked at every single tin project and an operation, and got a good understanding of how tin operates in a plant and in a mining environment. I think there's very few tangible tin deposits globally, and we've looked at all of them. So tin, I don't know whether it's like an emotional attachment, but I still really like the tin. So that would be my number one. Then lithium, tungsten is also looking very promising. So I think the tin, the tin, the lithium, and the tungsten, and this the copper at Brunnberg West is quite interesting. I mean, the old time has never mined the copper there, or never processed the copper. So there's huge copper dumps that we're pretty interested in. So we got the full suite, but definitely tin still remains my darling mineral, put it that way.
I mean, the tin price can move around a bit. I noticed that when the I think it was the I think it's the M23 rebel group in the DRC. Although I saw SP Angel called it the M25 rebel group, and I became confused about my memory whether it's M23 or N25. But anyway, they when they were moving through the Eastern DRC, the tin price just shot right up because Alphamin shut down, and everybody was wondering where the next where to get supply from was. So, I mean, it's quite a tight market, isn't it?
It's incredibly tight, and incredibly sensitive to changes in supply. I mean, Alphamin, the guys have done a great job in terms of getting that mine operational, and they've done a phenomenal job in a very difficult environment. They've got amazing grades. It really is just a pretty unique deposit. But they account for about 6% of the world's tin production, and you can see just how sensitive it is. I mean, the tin market's running at a deficit, I think, of about 20,000 tons of tin metal. So you don't it's not that easy to just get 20,000 tons back into the market. So I mean, even if they ramped up their production, we ramped up our production, Myanmar came back into production, I count you could probably only get another 10,000 tons to make up that deficit. So it's a very they're absolutely very sensitive to supply disruptions, and I think that it's because of its unique capable or sort of capabilities, the tin market is one to really pay close attention to, because it's so critical to all of the new applications like AI and what have you. So specifically in the semiconductors. So it is something that I'm actually surprised that the price is where it is, to be honest. I mean, it's ludicrous how little tin supply is capable of coming onto the market at the moment.
Well, there was that famous MIT study a few years ago where they ranked tin as being the most desirable metal for the future, I think. I can't remember how they phrased it exactly, but that was their point.
And it's just got such unique characteristics. And its closest substitute is probably lead. And with the with what lead does to the human body. It's there really is very few substitutes for tin in the world. And it's funny, nobody quite makes the distinction between the tin cup status and everyone's like, well, what tin roofs or tin cups, and nobody really understands the modern uses of tin, which is probably why there hasn't been any exploration and development in the last 30 years in the mineral. So it's quite a unique space to be in.
So how much tin are you guys producing at the moment then?
So we produce 1,000 tons of tin metal per year, and we're looking to increase that to about 1,500, 1,600 tons. But we're quite with this new discovery or this new ore supplier agreement that we've entered into in Gwanthaba, we could far surpass that. So I'm really pushing my team to get throughput up, and drop the margins, drop our all-in sustaining costs, because I think that there's a real opportunity for when the market does realize how little tin there is out there, that we were probably the best placed listed company outside of Alphamin and Metals X to benefit from that.
So, what's this ore supply agreement that you just referred to?
So this is the new deposit, this Grant Hub. So we've got an option to acquire the asset, but in the meantime, the owners of the asset will supply us with ore, and we've built a new processing facility at our operations to process that material. So that's where I see a lot of future production increases coming from that deposit and from our new processing plant.
Right. So, and does that mean the byproduct production will increase as well, presumably?
So that deposit doesn't have the byproducts that we've got at Wiese. It is more of a standalone tin deposit. But as we increase the production at Wiese, most definitely you will get we'll get an increase in the tantalum and the lithium credits.
Right. And so how are you going to get the costs down? Have you got any sort of tangible things you can talk about, or is it just a constant battle?
No, look, it's I mean, costs are always a constant battle. So we are looking at ways in which we can increase the throughput. So an increase in the throughput in your current facilities dilutes your fixed costs. So that's what we focused on. The plant itself is a gravity-based separation plant. So we don't rely on chemical separation. It's more about enhancing your flow dynamics through the plant. So we are constantly looking at areas in which you get better efficiencies in the plant. We've got just like my crushers are a little bit dated. I can update those, and it's we chase every dollar on our all-in sustaining cost. It's I think very few people in the exploration phase, and it's always easy to change a block on an Excel model, but when you actually have to do it in real time, it's always takes a lot longer and a lot harder than you think. But the other thing that we're looking at is ore sorting. So we've got some ore sorters that we just need to upgrade our electricity supply that we're working on at the moment. But the ore sorters also provide a lot more efficiency in terms of pre-concentrating your material before it gets into your processing plant. So there are a number of initiatives. I think that we could shave probably another $4,000 or $5,000 off our all-in sustaining cost in the near term, and that's just about getting throughput and getting better efficiencies in my plant.
So just for context, $4,000 or $5,000 off, what is the current cost?
At $28,000 a ton. So, and we're selling for about $32,000 to $33,000 a ton. The nice thing about tin, obviously, as well, is that you can hedge. So we've got a rolling hedge with our banks. If we can move to closer to a 50% margin on our production, that's the target I'm pushing for my team at the moment.
And what does the Andrada balance sheet look like? Have you got debt or cash? How are you set up in that regard?
Yeah, so look, I mean, we're very lucky that we've entered into banking relationships with Bank Windhoek and Development Bank of Namibia. You know, that people do get concerned about debt, but having debt providers or you know, stable debt providers like the banks already in this early stage of our life cycle is quite beneficial in terms of, especially when you're looking at plant expansion. You know, we've obviously got for on the equity side, you know, things like the partnership with SQM. So you know, across the group, the balance sheet is very strong. And you know, we've also got Orion in there, Orion Resource Partners, also, you know, long term financiers. And what we will look to do is always, you know, in the project specific environments, look to introduce strategic partners at the project level.
Yeah, so I mean, you guys are kind of what the London market always used to like back in the old days, which is a smaller mining company that's got cash that can use the cash to fund its expansion, and obviously keep dilution to a minimum. I mean, you could do an equity raise if you wanted to, but there's no sort of pressure in that regard to do it, I suppose.
Exactly, and look, I mean, you know, that's old school mining. I think people got very wrapped up in spreadsheet mining over the last couple of years. You know, and it's a very big jump going from a spreadsheet to actually understanding your ore body. You know, doing proper ore body modeling and understanding how material moves through a plant. And the best way of doing that is actually by building it and you know, using your money wisely to build it. You know, we are always in discussions with strategic partners. You know, I think the capital markets are you know, are changing somewhat. You know, fund allocation, it doesn't necessarily go into small caps like it used to, but we are seeing a lot of things like family offices taking a more of an active interest. That it's taking more of a longer term view, so you know we are always looking at relationships like that, you know, where that can enhance our share register.
So in terms of the support you've got, you obviously can be quite nimble, or you can maneuver quite quickly if you want to. So, I mean, Andrada is in terms of its asset base has grown quite considerably since it started. Are you interested in acquiring more assets in Namibia or perhaps even in other jurisdictions?
Look, I think we'll get to that phase very much so. You know, once we've got a stable development path for all of our assets, I think that we're getting to that phase in our growth cycle. But you know, for now, for the sort of short to medium term, at least, we're going to focus on our knitting, focus on getting cash flows up. But you know, I think that there are going to be a lot of opportunities, and I think that our team's ability to execute on large scale projects would make us attractive partners for other projects out there. So I don't want to sort of say yes right now, but I also don't want to say it's totally off the table.
So, I mean, that just leads me to ask the natural question. Do you think you'll be a dividend payer in future years?
Look, for a junior miner, paying a dividend is the holy grail. So, you know, I'd obviously love to do that. I'd love to reward shareholders for their longstanding sort of support and loyalty to the company. So yeah, look, I'd love to get to that place, most definitely.
So let's just talk a little bit about the asset we haven't really mentioned much, the Brandenburg West one. What's going to happen there? Are you allocating a sort of sizable budget to bringing that forward?
Yes, look, we've already done quite an extensive drill program there. You know, it is a really phenomenal asset in that, you know, the old pits, it's a different type of mineralization, but you know, there's some really incredible grades of tin and tungsten there. And what we've done from a geological point of view is just map out the extent of that mineralization, and that and it basically extends for another 3 or 4 kilometers itself. So very bullish on what we can do with that. As I mentioned, the copper was never extracted at that deposit, so I do see that we could look to add the copper into that as well. I think we've probably exhausted the budget currently with where we are from an exploration point of view, and we are doing a bit of metallurgical test work, but maybe we'll get a strategic partner in there to accelerate that development as well.
So, what do you do when you go mining at these various assets? You produce metal on site, or do you produce concentrate and truck it somewhere? How does it all fit together on that end of things?
Yeah, so I mean, our plant basically is a concentrating plant. So I mean, we basically dig up 0.15% and concentrate that to a 60% tin metal in concentrate. It's a very high value product. So you just truck it and containerize it, and then send that off to the smelters. That they produce a 99.99% tin metal. The tantalum, very similar. The lithium, we'll probably look to beneficiate that a little bit further down into a concentrate, but might even look at some type of a lithium hydroxide facility in the sort of medium to longer term in Namibia. But generally, I think at this stage, beneficiating it to a concentrate is the most economical, and given infrastructure availability in terms of water and power, I think that's the limitation of where we can go, and it's beneficiation's always a it's always a bit of a moving target. It's how far can you beneficiate it within the limitations of your existing infrastructures is pretty much what we'll always look at.
So where are these smelters then? Are they close by?
They're actually in Thailand. So
Thailand, so they're
yeah,
not
in
close
Thailand,
by.
not close by, no. But we the Thailand smelting company, we basically sell all of our material to them. It's actually owned by AMC Trading, which is a UK-based company. So essentially, still keeping it, selling it to UK institutions, pretty much.
So on the face of it, that does seem surprising, though, that ore mined in Namibia ends up creating metal in Thailand. One would have thought there would be a more local and therefore economic alternative in Africa.
And it's something we've considered, but I think that beneficiating it from your 60% concentrate to 99.9%, the sort of economic credits that you get are so negligible that it doesn't really make that much sense. I mean, we get 93 or 94% payability on the tin grade, so it's a very high quality product, and so it doesn't really pay us to, or doesn't really beneficiate much more to get it to that 99.9%. So it's something that we've looked at, but the economic benefits are negligible, really, in the greater scheme of things.
Is tin smelting a specific activity? Do companies smelt? Do they specialize in smelting tin, or is it more a case of a smelting company which can do tin as well as other metals?
Yeah, look, I liken tin smelting to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. That's there's some type of a unique method that they use to get to that purity of tin. That I've never actually been allowed into to see what goes on in the background there. So it is a very specialist sort of niche to get to that high level of purity.
Right, yeah, because I mean there has been smelting activities of metals in Namibia before, hasn't there? I mean it's not alien to the country to smelt metals, but obviously you guys are not doing the tin there.
Yeah, look, and as I said, it's something we will consider possibly in the future. But that adds a whole new dynamic in terms of power allocation and safety requirements and things like that. So for now, I think that still maintain that the best benefit we've got is producing a concentrate. But if things do change in the world, which that's changing on a daily basis, it might be worth something to consider.
So what can we look out for in terms of news flow from you guys over the coming months, into the UK summer and autumn?
Look, there's going to be quite a lot. I think the Grant Hub sort of partnership has been quite key to us. We've put a lot of work in putting that together. We are still, as I said, speaking with strategic partners for the assets. We're going to have quite an aggressive drilling program at Lithium Ridge, plant expansion and cost reduction at Uis, partnerships possibly at Brandberg West, and extending or accelerating the development of Brandberg West. Our new plants, getting that facility up and running. Getting production out of that plant. So, look, I think the first 6 months we've been relatively quiet. News has been building up, I think that once it starts, there's going to be quite a plethora of good news for people to enjoy and for us to be proud of what we've achieved in the course of this year.
How much time do you spend in Namibia yourself then?
Very often I'm actually busy getting my permanent residency now. I do consider myself somewhat of a local Namibian. I've got it's a lovely place to visit, a lovely place to be associated with. So as I said, yeah, probably going to be spending a lot more time there in the future.
So I've not been to Namibia myself, but I've heard two, or I've got two positive things about Namibia that I know, which are not to do with mining. The one is that apparently the Namaqualand daisies are just an amazing sight to behold, and the other is the Windhoek beer is probably the best lager in the world.
Yeah,
Lager.
it's look. I've definitely sampled the beer, not so much the flowers, but it's there's good, it's got some good heritage in terms of beer production. But it is a phenomenally beautiful country, and especially we've had a lot of really good rains this year, and I mean the whole country's just come alive, which is it really is a fantastic place to visit tonight. And I would encourage all the listeners and yourself to definitely go and visit it and sample the beer, the local cuisine, and the friendliness of the Namibian people. So it really has to be high on everybody's bucket list.
So let's just sort of perhaps finish with a quick geography lesson. So I was up near the Caprivi Strip at the beginning of the year, but I didn't actually quite make it into Namibia. But where in Namibia are you guys actually?
So we're probably midway, or I'd say almost right in the middle of Namibia. So we're about 200 kilometers away from the port. The closest seaside town is Henty's Bay, which is also a very popular fishing spot, and a popular holiday destination. And then we're probably about 120 kilometers or so inland from there. So it is right in the middle of literally nowhere, but we at the foothills of the Brandberg Mountain, which is the tallest mountain in Namibia, and it's got somewhat of a mystical allure to it, because it's an extinct volcano, and it literally looks like a fire mountain, which Brandberg means fire mountain. So, in the evenings, it's a great place to sit and watch the sunset over the Fire Mountain, and watch it literally looks like it comes alive. So yeah, pretty much the middle of Namibia, in one of the most beautiful places or settings that you could imagine out there.
So, in your view, the geology of Namibia has still got a lot to offer, a lot of potential to reveal more riches and minerals.
Absolutely, and I mean we've seen a lot of work also on the gold side. Our colleagues higher and then with Osino, I think that there's a lot of very interesting gold geology that's being uncovered at this stage. So I think it really is a place to watch, and definitely it's a whole new frontier province that we've opened up and are operating in. So I'm very excited by the future of Namibia and Andrada in particular.
Yeah, and they've got a cricket team as well. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
Just
Yeah.
so we'll see how they do in the World Cup.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, Anthony, it's been really good to catch up with you. We look forward to watching the progress that you guys are going to make over the coming months. And then hopefully you'll come back perhaps later in the year and give us an update and talk us through all your latest thoughts on the mining sector.
Most definitely, Alistair, and thank you for your time. And always look forward to catching up with you. And hopefully, we'll be able to look back on a lot of good news over the course of the year.
Yeah, let's hope so. Really good to chat.
All right, thanks, Alistair.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.